Hello and welcome to Max Politics. This is Ben Max, coming to you from New York Law School and its Center for New York City Law. Thanks for tuning in for this episode of the show. It's Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Today on the show, we are dissecting some of the new New York State budget deal that was reached over the past week between Governor Kathy Hochul and the state legislature. It's a $237 billion spending plan for the current fiscal year, which began April 1st. The budget was about 3 weeks late this year. And it has a lot of policy in it, as usual. Perhaps the marquee policy area dealing with what may well be the biggest long-term ongoing crisis facing New York is housing. And as many had hoped, and the governor made a major priority, there was a significant housing policy package agreed to in this new state budget. And that's what we're focused on here today. My guest is Ruth Ann Wisnauskas, the state housing commissioner, who will help break down the agreement and what it means, as well as how it fits into the bigger picture of addressing the New York housing and affordability crisis. That crisis is most acute in New York City and its suburbs, of course, but also applies to other parts of the state. And much of the housing policy debate has centered around the five boroughs, especially as Mayor Eric Adams and his administration have been pushing for new tools to add to the city's housing stock. And many state legislators representing parts of the city have sought policies like a tax break to encourage affordable housing development, new tenant protections, and many other policies. The governor and the legislature delivered on the city's major housing policy asks in this budget. And the two executives are among the most pleased with this deal, which has many pieces to it and a lot of compromise involved. It's leaving many parties frustrated about some of the details of those compromises, but also signifying, pretty much agreed to across the board, some real progress after virtually nothing was done on housing policy last year in Albany, despite efforts by the governor and others to take some action. New York City is short hundreds of thousands of homes. It's hard to say exactly how many are needed to both accommodate the demand and to help make the city more affordable for working and middle-class people. But the estimates are that the city needs to build roughly 50,000 new housing units per year over about a decade. So roughly 500,000 new housing units, which is the goal Mayor Adams has put forward, calling it a moonshot goal, meaning very hard to reach, but what the city wants to try to achieve through a variety of tools and also just generally having a more pro-development orientation. Last year, Governor Hochul put forward her own statewide housing plan anchored in what she called the New York Housing Compact, which in essence would require modest but significant amounts of housing growth across the state in every area. And it was pegged at roughly a goal of 800,000 units statewide over a decade. The most demand is in New York City and its suburbs, but New York City has not been keeping up with demand or with enough housing to help dent the very renter-unfriendly market that has led to high and rapidly growing rents that far outpace earnings for so many New Yorkers who are either rent-burdened, severely rent-burdened, or unable to afford housing pretty much at all. Many people and families are living in overcrowded arrangements. There are many people living in what are actually illegal basement apartments. There are well over 100,000 people sleeping in city shelters every night. I don't think I probably need to go on describing the housing crisis facing New York. The city is losing working and middle-class individuals and families all the time, including those who are thinking about having children, already have children. And there's a lot of challenges for the city, but of course, also a lot of demand for people who want to stay in the city or move to the city. The suburbs are a connected but slightly different issue because there's not always leadership like there is in the city right now who want to encourage much more housing development. So that's been a key challenge in terms of New York State housing policy. The pace of housing development in New York City, especially the building of rental housing, has slowed to a crawl in recent years after the flawed but integral tax break for developers was allowed by the state legislature to expire in 2022. That was known as 421A. Last year, developers filed plans in the city for building just under 10,000 residential units across 285 projects, just a fifth of those 50,000 new homes that Mayor Adams and others say should be built each year to make a dent in the problems at hand. There's been heightened attention on the New York housing crisis. The conversation has undoubtedly shifted over the last two or so years, especially in part thanks to many advocates and experts, a select few elected officials at the city and state levels of government who've taken the lead, namely Governor Hochul and Mayor Adams as well. And Governor Hochul taking on an issue that her predecessors have largely avoided. In New York City, City Council Speaker Adrian Adams has also made housing a major focus, and there's just been a clear sea change in how lots of elected officials have been thinking about the issue of housing and housing supply and housing affordability, while also pushing for a variety of other housing policies as well. After Governor Hochul pressed the conversation last year, the legislature ultimately balked, though, didn't really do much of anything on housing, and the parties were back at the negotiating table this year. Hochul dropped her housing compact proposal for this year, at least, and its mandatory growth. And with a great deal of pressure on them, the legislators and the governor have now come to a deal on a housing policy package with a number of planks to it. Almost no one is happy, but almost everyone agrees that there's some real important progress here. The deal reached in the state budget that passed a few days ago, wrapping up at about April 20th in Albany, includes many housing-related items. I'm not going to go through all of them now. You can read up on that as you listen to the conversation, or maybe you already know the gist of some of the planks of the housing deal. I'll just go over a few really very quickly, but there's even more than I can name and more than I'll be able to get to with Commissioner Visnauskas in this conversation. A number of the policies are focused on New York City, where the mayor and his team were pushing for four main housing policy priorities. They got versions of all four of them. The mayor is very happy about that. The governor is happy about it too. And others, labor unions and others also happy, some developers, though there's a lot of consternation among various parties about different pieces of this deal. As the city tries to add to its housing supply, it is now going to get help from policies like a new tax incentive called 485X that is for the development of apartment buildings, especially that includes labor standards for construction and building services workers. Those requirements vary depending on the location and size of the project. I won't go through all those details. The state also passed an extension of the prior version of the tax break, 421A, which had expired a couple of years ago, and now extends the deadline from 2026 to 2031 for completion of projects that had qualified for 421A. Very important saving, you know, the potential for thousands of units of housing where they had been up in the air. There's now a program in place with a tax incentive to encourage the conversion of some obsolete, basically, office buildings into apartments. So that'll be interesting to see what kind of uptake there is for building owners and developers to move some office buildings into housing. And then there's a lifting of what's known as the FAR cap, floor area ratio cap on development in some parts of Manhattan, which has limited the density, the size of certain apartment buildings. This can now be shifted where apartment buildings going through the city's land use process for approvals, for rezonings, will be allowed to build bigger than they would have otherwise. And not even really so much necessarily taller. It's actually about sort of the density of the buildings. Some of the issues around the FAR cap have actually led to some of the very sort of skinny and very tall buildings. So some changes there. And that will coincide with some of the proposals from the Adams administration that are on the city level, namely what's called the City of Yes for Housing Opportunity changes to the city's zoning regulations. And I won't go into those details. If you want to hear a conversation about the City of Yes for Housing Opportunity proposal, I had an extensive discussion with the City Planning Director, Dan Gorodnick, about that. So you can find that in the podcast feed. And then also for the city, there's sort of this pilot program passed by the state to allow some parts of the city to see legalization process around already in use basement apartments, but it only applies to 15 of 59 community districts in the city. A lot again of sort of compromise and consternation there. So there's a lot more details to the deal in terms of those planks for the city. I won't go into all the specifics about which buildings and the affordability rates and the labor standards and all of that, but they're all in there. And then also in the state budget, very much worth highlighting, of course, that there is a version of the good cause eviction protections. It puts some limits on rent increases and what can happen around lease renewals, as well as reasons for eviction and how it's all tied together, where tenants have in the apartments that are covered, which is not all, have more protections around being kicked out of their apartments. Non-payment of rent remains a evictionable offense, but there's a lot of sort of now more regulation and complicated details to how exactly lease renewals and rent increases work. It's a compromise again that only applies to New York City automatically now, but other places can opt in to adopt a good cause eviction program, and they can tweak the details if they do opt in. And there's a lot of requirements there, and there's a lot of carve outs for the buildings and the apartments that do and do not qualify. Again, encourage people to read up on those specifics if you haven't. I won't go into all of them now. It's important to note that the new developer tax incentive and the good cause eviction protections that all apply to New York City sunset in 10 years. So there's some real time there for evaluation. They both could be altered or scrapped or whatever at any time by the legislature and the governor. But they are now tied together in terms of their plan sunsetting and renegotiation. So something to look forward to ahead of 2034, perhaps. And there's more changes in the state budget around rent regulation laws of apartments in the city, roughly 1 million that are under that system, and how landlords can recoup investments they put into fixing up apartments. There's a raised cap on how much landlords can recoup and pass on to tenants there in what's called the Individual Apartment Improvement Program, and still more. So I'll leave it there with the overview and the background. You can obviously read up on all the details in a number of news outlets or straight from what the governor's office or the legislature has put out. If you've missed any other recent episodes of the show, especially on housing, I'll point you to my recent conversation with New York City Deputy Mayor for Housing, Maria Torres Springer. We had a live event at New York Law School, but the audio of the really good conversation there is posted to the Max Politics podcast feed here that you can check out when you have a moment after this one. But on this episode of the show, Ruth Ann Wisnowskis is with me. We recorded this interview on Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. She's the commissioner of the New York State Division of Housing and Community Renewal, often known as HCR. She's also president and CEO of the New York State Homes and Community Renewal, a similarly named entity made up of different housing finance agencies. Simply put, Commissioner Wisnowskis runs the state's affordable housing agencies and programs with the mission to build, preserve, and protect housing, including affordable housing and including increasing home ownership throughout New York State. She's been in this role since 2017, now under two different governors. Her prior experience includes tenure in New York City government, including as commissioner of the city's Department of Housing Preservation and Development. And along with developing and pitching the latest housing policies of the Hochul administration, HCR is charged with carrying out the state's ongoing 5-year, $25 billion affordable housing program that aims to create or preserve 100,000 affordable homes across New York State and more. New York State Housing Commissioner Ruth Ann Wisnowskis is with me. Thank you for joining me again. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Glad to be here.
So we spoke a couple times last year, once here on the podcast before there was a budget deal, as you were helping pitch the administration's grand plans, housing compact, and a lot of different pieces. We spoke once again last year post-budget at a conference hosted by NYSAFA, the Affordable Housing Trade Association, where you were assessing sort of no progress in the budget really on housing and the need to keep pushing. So here we are. We've got a housing deal in the budget here in 2024. So before we get into all the details and such, how broadly, generally speaking, how are you feeling about sort of getting to a big compromise on housing policy and sort of getting some significant policies done here after what was a very frustrating year last year. I know for you and many others, the governor and many others in the legislature and elsewhere, but broadly speaking, how are you feeling about getting this package done?
I feel great. I feel really excited to be able to both sort of acknowledge and appreciate sort of the comprehensiveness of what got passed this year. And as we've talked about last year, you know, we really laid out a comprehensive package last year and didn't think that everything would get through the process, but thought some of it would. And obviously, we're very disappointed that nothing came out of that. And so the real pressure to do something was on, which was good, but as it was last year, but actually resulted in this year and what I think is really an enormous number of tools from that sort of comprehensive package that we laid out last year that are going to allow us to make really great progress in what is a housing crisis that's felt by people, not just in New York City, but across the state.
And before we get into more details on that, just say a little bit as HCR commissioner, sort of your role in all this, in terms of designing housing policy for the Hochul administration, in terms of sort of educating and negotiating housing policy. Where do you and your team have the biggest sort of roles and voices here?
So there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen when it comes to making housing policy at the state. And I would say we have a couple things that we do and we do well. One is for some stuff, we implement it. So it's always great to be the implementer because you can come back and say, we can't really do that, or that's not really the way that works, or let us do that, but we could actually do it a little better if we would just work. So we try to sort of be a feedback loop on the implementation side. But there certainly are a lot of things in this budget where we are not the implementer. And I think the voice that we try to bring to that is a data voice. So we do have an amazing research team here at HCR. So we try to provide a lot of data to help shape the policies. And then we also try to bring sort of the practice to that data and talk about, you know, based on that, what we think would and would not work for New Yorkers, what we think would and would not work for owners, for landlords, really across the spectrum, and to be able to provide kind of an operational piece outside of the work we do to housing work generally.
And so you're no stranger to all of this, but you have that expertise, you bring that data, you are called upon by the governor, to talk with legislators, to talk with other stakeholders, to bring those experiences, the feedback loop you mentioned, to bring the data, to bring the expertise. But then we have a political process. What can you say to people about, generally speaking, the way this big deal came together? And I think disagree if you would, but lots of people would say, there's still more work to do on the state's housing crisis, but this is a big deal. But how should people think about sort of the mishmash of policies that got put together here? Is it balanced in the right way? Are there ways that you're already thinking as an expert who has the data, who has the experience that, okay, you know what, because of political forces, this sort of package looks one way, and we know most likely as we see implementation of how this all plays out, there are ways we're going to probably need to supplement, or we're going to need to think about the future. How should people think about sort of how expert, how smart of a package this is?
Look, I would say a couple of things. One is, it is hard to get, you know, there's always imperfections in laws and in policies, and those things, you know, will play out over time. And that's what government is for, so, you know, be able to come back to the table, and what advocates are for, to come back to the table and make modifications as things work or don't work or could work better, be refined. And so we don't go into this thinking that what we've done today is, you know, going to last us a lifetime without change. So, you know, for sure on that. And look, as a result of getting somewhere, it always, it certainly in politics and in New York State, means there is compromise on stuff. So everyone, you know, can find pieces of this that they like and don't like. But on balance, we feel that this is a really incredible set of tools. And for two reasons. One is, as you know, it takes a long time to change the housing landscape in New York City and in New York State, right? It takes a long time to build buildings, takes a long time to get through permitting and approvals. So I think what's great about this package is it sort of has both a 10-year horizon to it with a lot of the supply policies and a lot of things in this, and also like a tomorrow policy with the price gouging and some of the other renter protections. So I think from a You know, it's always hard when you work in government and you want people who, you know, everyday people who have other non-governmental, non-housing jobs to actually feel the impact or feel the work that you're doing is important and feel that it is improving their lives. I think this is one where we have both a little bit of a short term, or we have both a sort of short term and a long term impact. And that's great because some stuff we'll see tomorrow, but some stuff is going to take us a couple of years. And that's sort of how it should be.
And the I was actually sort of I don't know, pleasantly surprised, I guess, to see that some of the sunsetting here, even though I and I think many other people have issues with sunsetting period for laws. I mean, they can always be sort of changed or scrapped or tweaked, but that the sunsetting on a lot of this stuff is that 10-year horizon. Was that a major priority of yours to make sure that there really wasn't a, I mean, look, they just did a, I'm not going to get you to comment on mayoral control of New York City schools, but they did another 2-year extension of mayoral control of city schools. Was it a big priority for you knowing that you're dealing with an extensive statewide housing policy, housing market, to really get, for example, a new tax incentive for development that has a 10-year window here?
I also will not comment on mayoral control of schools other than to say the things that we have are not, for the most part, continuations of what's existing, right? So we've had a program that's been expired for 2 years. We have a new 421A program 45X. We have a new set of tenant protections. We have a new commercial conversions tax exemption. We have a first time repeal, finally, for many people, of a residential density limit in the city of New York. We have a pilot program for basement conversions. We have some changes to the apartment, some of the apartment improvement program within Rent Stay, which I guess is sort of a modification of existing. We have a new middle income program, rental and homeownership. So a lot of this stuff is in fact new. It's not sort of extending something we've been doing for the better part of a decade. So I think in that case, I do think actually saying we're going to create a whole bunch of new things and we're going to give them a little bit of time to work or not work. And to your point on sunsets, and people definitely fall into two camps on sunsets. People can always come back sooner. It doesn't mean you can't, but it sort of means from a sort of from a thesis standpoint, like we need to give this a little bit of time to work. And so we're going to put out sort of like a 10-year marker on a lot of the supply stuff and then match the tenant protections to go with that.
This is probably a question like, asking a parent of several children to pick their favorite. But what are you most excited about in this package? Is there something from your vantage point that maybe it's something you either don't have to implement or something you do get to implement? But is there something you're sort of most excited about here, given that a lot of this is new, as you just said, that you are most excited about and think is particularly interesting or particularly promising, or what's most exciting to you here?
You know, it's interesting. I was having this sort of experience as I was going through the process where I would sort of run into people and they would say, like, what's going on? And you know, people always want to know sort of where things are and you know, sort of what's not making it through the process and what is. And as you may have recalled from talking to me in the past, I'm a fast talker. So I start and I like and my speed is going, right? I'm like, we're gonna do commercial conversions and basements, and we have a deed theft and we have insurance discrimination, we have an upstate tax exemption, and we have a one for affordable and one for. So, you know, I'm going. So one of the things that I think is to in a slightly non-answer to your question is that the number of things that came out of this budget is really amazing and speaks in some ways to the challenge, right? Which there is no single thing that is going to fix people's the pressure that people feel in their housing. Like not a day goes by that I don't read and anywhere you read about somebody who is priced out, being displaced, having a, you know, making choices that we do not want them to make between health insurance and food and housing costs and all of that. So I think it sort of reflects that we are throwing a lot of things out in this budget because it's a complicated problem and we need a lot of tools to fix it. I do think some of the things that people aren't talking about because you know in any given budget year, if we'd gotten five of these things through the process, we would have been having this discussion. And so the fact that we got 15 means there's a whole bunch of them that nobody's really talking about. I do think some of the changes on strengthening deed theft is a really important one. I mean, that is an issue that, you know, doesn't always sort of make the headlines, but it is, you know, incredibly upsetting and really devastating and is sort of very specific in certain communities around New York City, especially. So I think some of the changes on deed theft are great. I think the basement pilot, while not something that's also sort of rising to the top of everyone's discussion, is something that New York City has been working on for a long time and has been stuck by the state not allowing them to sort of go through a process to create a program. It might not be the perfect program, but at least they can start that process. And to your point, people can come back later and broaden the geography or tweak it other ways. So I do think there are, and we also did a accessory dwelling unit tax exemption so that as people are building accessory dwelling units, which can be a granny flat or a basement apartment or a little mini home in their yard or whatever version, people want to do the increased assessment on your taxes from that gets sort of phased in. So you don't get hit with a big tax change when you choose to have an accessory dwelling unit, which in many communities is going to provide a form of affordable housing for for young people, for seniors, for families. So there's a lot of stuff in there that I think isn't sort of rising. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it doesn't get the daylight that it might, in another year.
And on, since you mentioned it, on the accessory dwelling units, that's something where localities have to opt into allowing that. So that sort of leads me to something I wanted to ask you, which is there's a lot of sort of opting in, opting out. There's a lot of carve outs in a variety of these programs. You just talked about the basement pilot program, which only applies to roughly, I think it's 15 of the 59 community districts in New York City. A lot of this stuff is very complicated. Even the new development tax break 485X is complicated with labor standards in different sizes of projects and different locations and affordability requirements. Is all this stuff too complicated, or and because it's a lot of political, back to our prior discussion on sort of you take the expert housing policy, but then you have to mash it together with political considerations. Of course, this is government and politics, but a lot of this stuff is really complicated. Is that a problem, in terms of implementation, in terms of oversight and enforcement? Should we be worried about how complicated and all the opt-ins, opt-outs, the carve-outs, and all that? Should that be something that concerns people who want to see all of these work as best as possible?
I don't think so. I mean, I think by nature, the fact that we have so many things in the budget, and because it's not a one size fits all world, and it's not a one size fits all industry, and it's not a I would say a couple things. One, there are certain people who are only interested in one or two of these policies. So for those people, they will go deep on that and they will understand that, right? The person who's interested in 45X or the 420 extension, we used to learn that probably is not really focused on deed theft, or they're not focused on the ADU tax exemption. So we feel there's a lot of stuff for a lot of different constituencies in here, and they'll focus on the pieces of that that are important. They are nuanced and they get all complicated. And I would certainly say, as for myself in government, often try to sort of like get through that and try to explain as best I can, try to make things clear and try to advocate in that way when we are designing the laws. But you can't really do, sort of one size fits all things. There has to be sort of complexity in them in order for them to work. And I think we sort of put it on ourselves to make sure that we get them activated and that they start working so people can see them. And then they'll better understand whether or not they need to be changed from their complexity into something more simple or not. This is almost everything in here is really sort of a public-private thing. It is not something that government is necessarily going to do. It's working with the private sector. But for the most part, a lot of the things that are in here are also things that advocates have been asking for a long time, and they understand these programs, they understand the nuances, and they are more than ready to get ready to implement them.
So in New York City, a lot of the policies here are focused on New York City, and obviously that's the area, well, not, I don't know, the area of the state where I'm most focused, but also where the housing crisis with the city and its suburbs is most acute, although there's challenges in many parts of the state. But what's the sort of forecast on how this suite of policies, especially this new development incentive, 45X, is going to help boost housing supply in New York City, in combination with these other pieces, the potential for some office conversions to residential, the lifting of the floor area ratio cap in Manhattan or parts of Manhattan, the basement pilot. What do you think this is going to do for New York City and housing supply?
So I think a couple of things. One, when we look at past programs, right? So if we look at the old 421A program produced about 70,000 units over a decade. So we need to get back to that, right? We've had a real drop off in building permits, as people have sort of reported about in the last year. And so we want to see more cranes on the skyline. We want to see more offices converting to families. We want to see more people feeling secure that there's options for them. So I think we have certainly heard from the folks building the buildings that they very much need a 485X, that the extension, we also have the extension of the existing 421A for all the kind of the grandfather projects.
A
But
really important piece here, by the way, because there's, I don't know, close to how many units at stake there? I mean, potentially. I mean, that's thousands of housing units that were sort of in limbo here. Not all of them will necessarily get built now that there's an extension, because there was this big gap between the program expiring in 2022 and this. But that's a significant little sort of side point that is actually pretty big, right?
I might have skipped over that one when I was going real fast through them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's remember back, right? Last July, the governor went out to the Gowanus and said, what if we're not going to pass any new tax exemptions? I'm going to do one through ESD. And fast forward, they got 15,000 units of in Gowanus of residential housing that came to them to apply to get the benefit. So, and because it takes a long time to do, right? We don't have the time for programs to be expired and for something on the order of 15,000 units, of 10, 50,000 units to not get built. So we're really excited to sort of see the unleashing of a lot of stalled projects between the 485X and the 421A extension program. And the same on commercial conversions. I think some commercial conversions worked without an exemption, but for those that sort of either need a city of yes zoning change, which is happening at the same time, which is great. And thank you to Deputy Mayor Torres Springer and to the mayor and his team for doing that work. We think that for projects that weren't financially feasible, that the tax exemption will not only make them feasible, but we're going to get affordable housing out of them, which, obviously as the housing commissioner is sort of our number one goal when we look at the permanent affordability. We look at 25% of the units in these projects. That's like a big percentage, right, of market rate buildings that are going to get set aside for low and middle income New Yorkers who want to live oftentimes in what are, really neighborhoods that are getting where these are getting built, where there are great access to jobs, great schools, great access to transportation. So much opportunity for the city in that respect, and just through that tax exemption.
So obviously, as you just got at, the city is advancing the City of Yes for Housing Opportunity zoning change, which could unlock a lot of potential, as they call it, for a little more housing everywhere across the city, and have discussed that on this podcast with the City Planning Commissioner Dan Garodnick, and recently spoke with Deputy Mayor Torres Springer a little bit about how sort of the efforts at the state level coincide with the efforts at the city level, as you're getting at too. The mayor has this goal of 500,000 new housing units over 10 years. They call it a moonshot goal, which, the whole idea there is that it's a big reach. Do you think the city can get somewhere close to what essentially therefore is 50,000 new units of housing per year with what's in this package that the state just passed, with some of the zoning changes that the city's working on, and obviously other things that are on, the menu here that are active and happening, like neighborhood rezonings like Gowanus that you referenced, but other ones that are in the works now in the city and could come after. Is that sort of big suite of things, in your estimation, enough for the city to really have a big supply push over the next bunch of years to get the city to a place of a bit more affordability, sort of breaking the cost curve of rent growth, not necessarily making apartments a lot cheaper? We know that those are different. That's like a different way of thinking about it. But a vacancy rate that's much more, quote unquote, healthy for apartments, not 1%, but maybe sort of 6-7%. What do you think? I mean, how do you think about that forecast, or are there big pieces of the equation that still need to be done?
I would say that setting the goal is important, right? I think that everyone in this conversation agrees on the problem. But I think until we felt sort of until last year between us and the mayor, until we really started talking about, and you heard me probably particularly say this far too many times, but I think it provides clarity to say we produce 400,000 units of housing over 10 years, and we should assume the same thing for the next 10 if we do nothing different, and that is not enough, is a sort of a clearer way to sort of explain the problem than, there's no apartments anywhere, and I don't know why, and they're really expensive, and I can't afford them. So if we sort of say like that, that those are a function of the fact that there is not enough housing supply, we need to double it. Or in the mayor's case, we need to go to 500,000. For me, those are sort of important because then you start to answer the customer like, well, how do we get there? And then we start talking about these tools. And if our counterparties don't have any tools to do this, or they can't come up with any another way to get there, we would say then this is what we believe is the best way to get there. And frankly, we're not making this up. We're looking at other places around the country that are doing things, and we're trying to pull best practices from places. So I do think sort of the moonshot goal and the 800,000 units set out by the governor are important parts of the conversation because they help define where we're trying to go and why we're trying to pass these changes. Will it be enough? I think it goes a long way there. I don't think that that we think we really believed in the premise of the housing compact last year. So I don't think we have, put that on the shelf to collect dust for a decade per se. But I think it was really important for us to get all of these things passed, get them moving, get it's time to get to work, right? The best thing we can do is show that these things work and actually start people start building housing and we start getting money out the door. And then we can come back to, different types of tools that we may need as sort of a next step. But having another year go by as we did the last two, where there was no inaction, felt very much like not an option. And so I think we're all very optimistic and excited that we have this sort of series of tools that we can now get to work on, basically.
When we talk about this biggest tool, the 421A replacement 45X, and of course the extension of the projects into the 421 pipeline, when we talk about that sort of group as sort of the main production tool for rental apartments, they're going to come with a variety of sort of strings attached, as I mentioned, labor standards and affordability requirements. Lots of people think those are good things, but do you feel confident right now that those things are not going to bog down production in a counterproductive way? How do you, how do you sort of assess, or how are you thinking about the design of this program? Because you immediately have sort of James Whalen from the Real Estate Board of New York saying this is going to produce less housing than the old program because it has more attached to it. How do you assess it, and how should people be thinking about assessing it as it unfolds in terms of production levels and the trade-offs, perhaps with a little bit more production versus some deeper affordability and the labor standards that are involved?
So look, I think the process as it happens sort of in Albany and sort of in life is like these they're sort of creatures and they grow over time, right? So it's sort of there's not a path in which we would have created a tax exemption out of new cloth that would look very much different than the old program. And each time the program historically has been re-upped, it more sort of stuff, for lack of a better word, has kind of been added to it. Whether or not this version of it has too many things added to it to make it work, I think we should, let time test that a little bit and see. I think there's always a lot of, conjecture, right, for stuff like this passes. Everybody doesn't like pieces of it. It's never going to work. And not everybody got everything they asked for. And that's true for sort of it's true for every single thing we pass. And it's also true for, as I was sort of reeling off to people, the 15 things that we're working on, and they were like, oh, what about this other one? And I was like, I don't think we're going to get to that one this year, but we have 15 others that are great. So I think it's part of the process after this and sort of the postmortem that people will say things don't work. In the case of certainly the tenant protections, I think people are frustrated that they are, some people are frustrated that they're not as extensive as they were. Other people are frustrated that they're too extensive. And so, you have to sort of let time pass. And I think, ideally not unexpected that everyone has a little bit of something to say about it. But I think for those in sort of the housing policy world feeling very positive that these are tools that people use that will result in both tenant protections and housing supply for everyone.
421A, 485X, a variety of other things are in their own ways workarounds for the property tax system that is sort of broadly critiqued as antiquated, inequitable, and so forth. Does that come up at all in these conversations? Is that conversation going to happen maybe at some point to make some of these workarounds less needed, simplify things a bit, sort of more broadly create a property tax system that encourages apartment development in a way? When do we have that conversation?
I mean, I think that conversation happens a little bit all the time. It just doesn't always elevate to the level of action, but there's certainly and I'm sure you have looked at it. It's a very complicated topic, both just on the sort of substance of it and also sort of politically for New York. It's not an easy thing to dive in and tackle. So I look, I think people are always going to continue to push on that and to get to a better place. There was a some action, I think, in the lawsuits that happened right in the beginning, early phases of budget. So I think that's going to continue to be part of the conversation, and that we'll keep using these other tools until that overall gets fixed.
The is the state, just coming back to discussion of how the state action here also coincides with the city's efforts on zoning reform. Do you have any role in that? I mean, I know in this city's land use reform process, there's no state role, but are there ways that you can be supportive, can be helpful of this city of yes for housing opportunity moving through? Is there any new role for the state perhaps that should be considered here to sort of ensure for people that people understand some of the stakes around all this and how these policies work together? You know, there was, I think, a really big sort of missed opportunity and misconnection that people made where people didn't quite realize when the de Blasio administration and the city council passed mandatory inclusionary housing, which requires affordable housing in rezoned plots or neighborhoods, that really was relying on 421A to create that development. There's ways in which these policies are supposed to work together to really have maximum benefit. Is there any role for the state in this, or is it more just sort of supportive and sort of cheerleader? And you did your piece here in the state budget, and then the city now does its piece.
I would say that we are, incredibly supportive and really excited that the Adams administration is doing, comprehensive citywide zoning text change for housing specifically. I think it will be very impactful. And I think it will set the stage for doing future versions of that as this one plays out. And then there becomes another, as with all these things are iterative, there'll be another set of changes that they want to make, I think, in the future. And so we don't have a direct role in sort of the, square box of their local land use process, but we are work incredibly closely with them, as we do with all the municipalities across the state. Especially ones in the sort of context of our Pro Housing Communities program that are trying to reduce barriers to housing growth and housing supply. So we'll continue to partner with them, whether it's on capital or looking for, state legislative solutions that can support their efforts wherever we can.
And as I understand it, the city of New York is working on their application to be a pro housing community. So we'll see when they get that in. I know even I asked Deputy Mayor Tora Springer about this recently in our conversation that folks can listen to after this one. And she said the city's working on getting that paperwork in, so to speak. Which again is helps unlock potentially tens and hundreds of millions of dollars of discretionary funding that can help with sort of broader development and economic development and such. On good cause eviction, I spoke with some housing experts throughout this process who sort of privately, and maybe some publicly said this, but people sort of were warning tenant advocates to be careful what they wish for, because if you give landlords a ceiling for lease renewal rent increases and they know that's all they can do, they will do that then maybe every time, and they will go to the maximum where they might not necessarily have been going to the same high level of those increases. Do you have any thoughts on how this program is going to unfold? There's obviously, as you got at, plenty of tenant advocates who are frustrated by the compromise. I assume, in terms of that it doesn't go far enough and there's too many carve-outs and the, new construction exemption goes back to 2009 and forward and all sorts of things. I don't expect that to be your perspective, but of course, give us yours. Do you think that there's going to be some buyer's remorse here in terms of this policy? Do you think there's going to be challenges with implementation because of Landlords have to put in lease now, whether it's a good cause eviction rental. There's going to be all sorts of potential court cases. Is there a role you're going to play in the implementation? What are your sort of reflections on these different pieces of how the good cause compromise wound up?
Yeah, I think it's a fairly complicated new structure in a big city, right? So I think it's always going to we're always going to sort of be dealing in the aftermath with sort of the implementation and both from a transparency and is it the right policy sort of question. But I would say, look, we live in a city where there's a lot of protections for a lot of tenants and a lot of tenants that have no protections. And so to the extent that this moves the bar for a subset of tenants that they now have protections they didn't have before, whether that's in price, rent increase protections, or whether that is on just someone not renewing your lease for no reason, and that being a really unstable way to live in a city where the vacancy rate is so low. So I think that people should be happy that we have sort of a law on the books now to protect tenants, even if it's not the perfect law that some side of of folks asked for. I think I'm so I think it's a great I think it's great to provide protections for more tenants. I think that. On your question of sort of floor ceiling, I think one of the complications in doing this type of work is also that lots of times people are, they're solving for like the worst case scenario or they're solving for the bad actor. And so it's really hard to create public policy really just targeted at bad actors when there's tons of great actors in the world. And so I think that that floor ceiling issue may become an issue, but I think it'll be a very small subset of, I think most people will operate the buildings the way they always have and would never have. Raise the rents that high in the first place, and so wouldn't, seek this as an opportunity to be raising rents in a way they wouldn't otherwise would. And look, we will see, right? We will get into this process and into the policy, and if it needs to be tweaked, that will be the sort of public discourse as to sort of what's the next version of it. But I think it's a I think it is it's sort of from a fairness perspective for neighborhoods and for people, I think having a lot more tenants protected in the city of New York, people should see as a real benefit.
And is HCR playing a enforcement role here in any way, or is this going to wind up being more regulated locally in New York City? And then obviously key components of this are the ability for tenants and of course landlords to go to court for certain, violations of leases or perceived violation of, the new protections. But are you going to have an enhanced role here enforcing that the leases contain the disclosures they need to, or other things like that, or how does this play out now?
So it will mostly play out in the courts because that's where sort of the cases and sort of violations of this will play out. But we are going to, we have a couple responsibilities in the bill, including we're going to publish the CPI so people can see what the number is. We're going to publish the rent level sort of threshold where it applies and doesn't. We will also create the notice that has to go in tenants in landlords' leases they provide to tenants. So we will have some roles. We don't have an enforcement role or sort of a regulatory role, but we will help to provide information and be transparent and in as in all the ways that sort of the law gives us the ability to do that.
Okay. Last few questions for you, and I appreciate all the time. New York State Housing Commissioner Ruth Ann Wisnauskas, appreciate it as always, talking through some of the real nitty-gritty of a lot of this. The general question underpinning a lot of this that we're getting at is sort of who controls what levers of housing policy. And obviously, there was the effort last year with the Housing Compact for the state to come in and set a lot of new framework, a real statewide framework in a lot of ways. And now this year, a much more sort of localized approach with state policies being passed. The state is now going to have a role, sort of, as you mentioned, monitoring implementation over all this, especially working with New York City. But say a little bit about sort of where the discussions are around providing some more of a statewide framework. Is that something now you consider, take a deep breath here, celebrate these accomplishments, and it's sort of back to the drawing board thinking about that? Because there's clearly some key measures here around housing supply, tenant protections, and a variety of other things. But this sort of put a lot of things related to zoning really, sort of on the side in terms of the state's role. Where is that discussion at from your perspective?
So I would say that on the heels of last year, we had about a day off between between the end of budget, end of session, and sort of starting in on our July executive actions. So it was very clear last year the governor was not going to stop at legislative inaction and was going to keep going. Feel much happier this year to be in a place where we actually have gotten a lot of our policy tools passed, and I would argue like we should let some of these work for a minute and let's see what we need to do to keep going. That said, I don't know where the governor is on that, and so we haven't had our day off yet to then determine whether we're going to be right back at it for next year looking at new policies. But look, I think the real sort of challenge about it is that it's not while there are things in here that are very needed for tenants. The housing crisis and the supply issue is not a short one to solve. And so we really need, some time for housing to get built, for some of that pressure to go away. And that's just sort of an unfortunate reality for people who live with the stress of high rents every day, as you sort of alluded to before on the question of rents not coming down, but sort of the increase in rents kind of slowing and how do we get to that? I mean, that is the goal, right? Is to really see some relief for people, whether it's in finding an apartment or an apartment at a certain rent that they can afford. So I don't think we're going to stop working until we know we've done everything we can for New Yorkers to be able to sleep a little more stably and soundly at night. But I don't know where we'll be next year.
And one of the things that on that front that always sort of sticks with me, and I think I've asked you about this before, but sort of always strikes me as one of the things that seems like a real no-brainer is this idea of transit-oriented development, right? Accomplishes a number of things at once, makes so much sense in many ways. To me, sort of seem like one of the key things to try to trade off for other things, in terms of increasing supply for, the possibilities of other things related to tenant protections or housing vouchers or whatever it might be. But seems like, again, with the compact sort of got put to the side for negotiating some more of these specific things. Am I wrong to think that transit-oriented development is like such a key piece of where New York State needs to head in the MTA region to build more housing around transit? Isn't this sort of like obviously a linchpin of where the future needs to be in New York?
Obviously, I mean, we felt very strongly about the transit-oriented development piece of the work we were doing last year, and in a way and to your point of like, do we even have to sort of justify this one or like defend this one, right? It seems so obvious, but not true for all communities, right? Who didn't always agree with that. So I think there is more work to be done with that. I think there's also, I'm sort of a both ever an optimist and also ever sort of a let's try things on a pilot basis and prove the point and then have people ask us to do it, right? Rather than us fighting with them once they see what it really looks like. And that's true for affordable housing generally, right? People would say, like, I don't really want that. And then a building gets built and they're like, oh, that maybe I do want to live there. Actually, that looks pretty nice. So I think it's on us to sort of prove the point sometimes in some of these pilots. So we will, for our part, continue to work with the MTA. Where they have land available that we can be building housing on through our own processes. And certainly other states have in their, sort of version of lay out a comprehensive plan, but then do pieces of it, enacted sort of transit-oriented development specific pieces. So certainly I think, on the table could be whether we further discussions on TOD for New York City or New York State as we go forward.
Right. And there is some TOD component to the city's proposed zoning
Yes.
changes. So that'll be interesting to see, where that lands. And it's going to be very soon subject to negotiations with the city council after input from community boards and borough presidents and so forth. And so all of that is up for negotiation into what a final change may look like, assuming that there is, enough buy-in, which all indications are there will be some semblance of this, zoning framework that gets moved through, because there's a lot of agreement, in New York City, as we just saw grow in New York State, that a lot more needs to be done in terms of housing supply. In terms of how TOD, the framework of the housing compact and exclusionary zoning and some of these issues relate to the New York City suburbs, the northern suburbs, Long Island. What can be done to sort of shift that conversation further. There's a lot of talk about how the, housing market needs to be thought about as a regional market. And we see lots of people move in and out of New York City from the suburbs, which, by the way, also, includes parts of New Jersey, of course, where, in some interesting parts of New Jersey, they're doing a lot on housing. What happens next in terms of shifting some of that conversation around more housing growth in the New York City suburbs? Is that just about rethinking how to approach things like transit-oriented development and things like the housing compact in some way, in 2025? How should people be thinking about New York City and the region and the state in its housing supply crisis, think about where to go next in terms of those suburban issues that seem to be among the trickiest?
Yeah, so I'm sure as you saw, the governor last summer really leaned into the sort of carrot approach of working with the suburbs on housing. And so where we were last year was in launching the Per Housing Communities was we had this $650 million, so it's not a small amount of money that was going to be sort of prioritized to Per Housing Communities. And then we have now shifted that in the budget, and that went through also. We're now that $650 million is only available to Per Housing Communities. So we think that's a big thing for towns in Long Island, cities and towns and villages in Long Island, as well as in Westchester, where if they want to have access to, there's programs like the Long Island Investment Fund. It's a really flexible source of funds that localities can apply to for infrastructure or other types of upgrades. There's the Mid-Hudson Momentum Fund. These are funds that the state has set up that now we're saying we're only going to allow these to be accessed by Per Housing Communities. And in order to be a Per Housing Community, you have to either be growing or embracing growth. And so we are trying to work with everybody who's willing to work with us to try to get that housing growth to happen. Because look, there are a lot of places where I think the local governments want to grow. They just haven't had infrastructure. They need more resources. And so sort of our theory that we've posited since last summer to now is let's work with all of them and start to get that housing built, and let's do it with resources that we know are important to people.
Last question for you. The governor has talked, and you've talked about, taking this issue on, especially just the bigger issue of building enough housing in New York, where it hadn't really been taken on at the state level, and that this is wasn't going to be a one-year thing and needs to be a multi-year process. We're obviously now sort of 2 years into it. You have housing advocates who have looked at, the way that some of these conversations have gone in other places like California. Do you have a little bit now, sort of not even 2 years in, a year and a half in to really taking this on? Do you, and what you know about other places, do you have a little bit of perspective for sort of, to sort of share about either the ways things have gone in other places that you think New York is now sort of on a similar path? Or ways in which to think about sort of the long game here of ensuring the sort of future of New York vis-a-vis its housing affordability crisis?
I mean, one of the things we said last year over and over is that other localities that have been successful have said that you can't do, voluntary programs. You have to do mandates. And that's the only thing that's going to change things. And that's why we came in last year with the mandate and we're, faced an enormous headwinds on that and sort of result, came back over the summer with sort of the carrot approach. Doesn't mean we don't believe that we need mandates. We absolutely do. They just aren't something that's sort of viable right now. But I think there's a lot of optimism in all that we were able to do this year. I mean, I think, were we to have a different outcome coming out of this budget, we would be 3 years in a row with people, all agreeing that we have a crisis, but like zero agreement on being able to get to a compromise position to get things forward. It would have been really unfortunate. So I just sort of feel like there's a lot of optimism in the air right now that we have done a lot. We have looked to other places and tried to do what they, sort of on the mandate side and couldn't. But that doesn't mean that, there aren't other tools that we have that can make a big difference. And, this is, it's a long game, but these are important tools for us to get there.
All right. There was a bunch of things we didn't get to. Any last thing that we didn't get to that you want to say something about or clarify anything out there that you think is being, inaccurately portrayed or any final thought on a piece of the puzzle here that we didn't get to? I know there's been pushback from some of the sort of lobby groups for landlords of rent stabilized buildings that what you did on individual apartment improvements isn't enough, whereas you have obviously criticism on the other. So you got to all this that people are unhappy on all sides of things. I don't know if there's anything on that that you're thinking about, because that that was a fairly significant change to the IAI formula. The Housing Access Voucher Program didn't make it into the deal. I don't know if you have thoughts on that or anything else you want to say in our closing moments here.
I have thoughts on all of those things, but I think my
We need
most
another hour. Yeah,
yes,
go
my
ahead.
most sort of succinct and what I think is a slightly funny comment at it all, but I remind people that in the budget is also money. And there is over $600 million of new capital in the budget this year, specifically for housing. Some of it is for public housing in the rest of the state. There's a new middle income program. There is money for infill housing upstate. There's money for land banks. There's $600 million, and that's a lot. That is a lot of money. $600 million for capital specifically for housing. So I think in addition to all the many things we've ticked off today in the budget, there is also a lot of capital for housing, which is just sort of a great bottom line to the whole thing.
Money in the budget. Very good. I like it. That's excellent.
No one's asked me about that. No one's asked about, is there any money in the
It's
budget?
funny. It's funny. That's very funny. There are capital. There are some of those things on my list here of things I didn't get to. So I guess that again shows about prioritization and what people are paying attention to. But I appreciate that reminder, and that also ties in with something I'll get you about next time, which is sort of the development on state-owned land, which I think is a really interesting piece of this and what happens there. But I'm going to let you go now. New York State Housing Commissioner Ruth Ann Wisnauskas, thank you for all the time. Appreciate it. And we'll be in touch.
Thanks so much.